You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation brought to you by Go Wild. If you haven't already checked out the Go Wild app, you need to. This app is basically a social media community designed for outdoor enthusiasts, and that includes hunters, fishermen and women, and camping and canoeing. And if you love the outdoors, you need to get the Go Wild app. It allows you to track the time that you spend outside. There is a ton of giveaways going on right now, so you need to sign up for this, you know, this social media community that is Go Wild, and it can be downloaded anywhere that the you currently download apps. And for more information, visit timetogowild.com.
Welcome to the Rookies in the Backcountry podcast. Today is the After the Hunt show where I have my two hunting partners come on and we do just kind of a big wrap up on the show. So stay tuned for that. It's coming up here in just a couple minutes. I want to put out some information first and then we'll get the show going. So first things first, I want to remind everybody about the hunting story giveaway. Basically, write in your hunting story, send it to me, win a prize package. I'm doing a giveaway to an archery hunter and a rifle hunter. And if you want to know the details, go to backcountryrookies.com. I have all of the submission dates and when I'm going to pick the winners and the prize package. All of that stuff is out there on backcountryrookies.com. I'll run down some of the prizes really quick. Vortex Optics jumped on board here recently, which is really cool. So for each winner, I have a set of Vortex Viper 10x42 HD binoculars, which are phenomenal. I took them out last weekend and used them the whole weekend while I was out Audad sheep hunting and scouting for mule deer and ended up chasing some cow elk around out in West Texas. So they are phenomenal binoculars. I've also got, each winner will get a 1 month box from the Mountain Hunter Box. Check those guys out, at Mountain Hunter Box on Instagram. Derek over there, every month he puts together a really, really good box. And, you can go on the website and check it out and see what all he's got going on. Onyx Maps is given a 1 year membership. So you get a 1 year premium membership to Onyx Maps. And Go Hunt is giving away a $250 gift certificate to use in their Go Hunt shop, which is very good quality products. You can go in there and check it out. $250. So right now the prize package is getting really good. Backcountryrookies.com. Jump on there and check it out. Look at all the prize packages and the rules and all that stuff. And I'm also on the website, I'm starting to put together packing lists so that you can see what other people are packing. If you're new to backcountry hunting and you've never been out there before and you're trying to think about what it is that you want to pack, or you know, you're just kind of curious, I'm trying to build a one-stop shop as far as packing list resources go. So you can go on there and you can click anything from 1 day to 2, 3, 4, 5 days. Trying to get stuff up to 14 days. I don't have every day filled out at this point. I've got a few of them listed on there, but they're on there and you can go on there and check them out. So I'm hoping that's eventually going to be a one-stop shop, whatever you want. So even guys with experience that maybe don't have a day packing list or they don't have a 10-day packing list can use that as a resource. And then I'm also going to start putting some dehydrated meal recipes on there too. I don't have that on there yet. I'm starting to gather the recipes right now. Should be out in the next couple of weeks, I'm thinking. So you'll be able to jump in there and look at what other people are packing. Tested recipes. So you know they're going to taste good and they're going to be a lot healthier than some of those prepackaged sodium loaded meals. So more to come on the recipes. They're also going to have, I have people submitting some of their favorite game recipes. So it won't only be dehydrated meals. It's also going to be people's favorite elk backstrap or antelope, mule deer, whitetail deer, just kind of whatever people are eating. I'm going to get them to submit those too so that we can get those up there. So you'll have just tons of options as far as recipes go. And then you'll have the packing list on there too. So lots of good information on backcountryrookies.com. Jump over there and check it out. Also, make sure you jump over and check out on Facebook, the Backcountry Rookies page, and then start getting into the private group that I have, which is the Backcountry Rookies Nation. And that's a private group on Facebook. As always, check out Instagram at Backcountry Rookies. So there's a lot of cool stuff out there. Just get out there and check stuff out. And with that, here we go. The After the Hunt show. This is the wrap up of our 6-day adventure that we had out in the woods. So here we go. Enjoy. Today's show, I've got Neil Burge, who you guys might remember from podcast number 13. I introduced him as my hunting partner, and during that podcast, we talked a lot about how this all kind of came about and how we decided that we were going to elk hunt and all that stuff. So if you haven't listened to that podcast with Neil, definitely go back and check it out. We talked about a lot of stuff, even preparation and all that stuff. We also, not too long ago, about a month and a half, by now it's probably been about 2 months ago, I met a new friend through an old friend of mine, and that's Gus Fletcher. Gus was saying that he didn't really have anybody to hunt with during the archery season, so he was going to be doing a lot of solo hunting, and I invited him to come out and hunt with me and Neil. So lucky for us, we gained a third hunter, which turned out to be a huge benefit for Neil and I being brand new to the backcountry. Gus brought a lot of experience. So he had already killed a bull, which meant that, he was already tagged out. So when Gus came out to hunt with us, he was just a dedicated caller and kind of a teacher for Neil and I. With that extremely long introduction there, I'm going to give Gus a minute to talk about himself and kind of introduce himself a little bit, and then we'll get going with the show. So, Gus, go ahead.
First off, thanks, Chad, for having me on. Neil, how's it going? Like you said, my name is Gus Fletcher. I was born and raised in a small town in Oregon. I grew up, had the pleasure of growing up literally right in the middle of the Cascade Mountains. So I had endless amounts of hunting right out of my back door. Chasing elk was kind of my passion from honestly as far back as I can remember. I remember I used to sit up on the woodland at my house with an elk talk, one of the old school elk talk call. Or cow talk, I think it was, one of those. My dad gave me, and I would just sit there and squeal on that thing all day long. Elk hunting is just kind of what I love to do, and I was just glad to be a part of this week.
So it turned out to be really, really fun, and of course, in many hunting expeditions or adventures or whatever you want to call them, I think we became pretty good friends that week that we spent together. So it was certainly a good week for me, and I can't wait to do it again. And the introductions are made. If you guys want to know more about Neil, just jump back and listen to that podcast, and get to hear a whole lot about him. With that, I just kind of wanted to lead into the different days that we hunted and sort of how our week went. We had a lot of encounters with elk, and we really had a really good week, especially after talking to a lot of the other people that hunted in Colorado, and Gus is on a bunch of the hunting forums and talk chat boards and stuff. There was a lot of people that really, really struggled in Colorado this year. And I don't think it was just Colorado. I think it's been kind of everywhere listening to the chatter, but we were focused primarily on Colorado, of course. But there was a lot of issues, and I think a lot of it had to do with the weather and the heat and the moon phase and just kind of the way everything went. But we were pretty fortunate. We at least heard a cow call or a bugle every day that we were out, except for the first day that we actually were hunting. So we had a lot of luck. And without getting a bull on the ground, I would say that we were successful. I know
for me, we had a lot of lessons learned and a ton of takeaways for next year. So with all of that being said, I'll kind of talk a little bit about the way that we started this out. That the first day, and I'm going to call that day zero, was the day that everybody was kind of coming together and we were all linking up in town and you know, in the little town that we were near. And everybody kind of came together. We ended up linking up a little bit later in the evening than what we thought we were going to. And that actually worked out to be pretty good. I think originally we were going to try to hit the mountain and get up in there and just check it out a little bit that night. But as it turned out, by the time we got to the area that we were going to be hunting in, it was kind of late, and I think it was already dark. So we just kind of threw the sleeping bags out on the ground and slept under the stars that night. But prior to hitting the sack that night, we all cracked open a couple of beers, and we had a little bit of a bourbon that we shared that night, which worked out perfect. It gave us an opportunity to get to know each other. And like I said, Neil and I already knew each other, so that was that, you know, him and I, there was no introduction needed there, but neither one of us had ever met Gus face to face. And I had only talked to Gus a couple of times over the phone and via Skype and things like that. So it's pretty cool to be able to get to know everybody that night in sort of a more relaxed environment where we were able to just kick back, BS a little bit, and kind of talk about what the week was going to bring. You know, Gus was kind of giving us insights on, you know, this is the type of country that we're going to be in, and this is the way it's going to be, and it's going to be hot, kind of talking about weather, just all of those, just everything we could talk about. So anyway, that was day zero. We got to bed a little bit late that night, but it really didn't seem to impact us too much. We woke up pretty early the next morning, and we headed out to the mountain. We got to the trailhead, and I mean, we were already there. We just had to drive a little ways to the grabbed all of our gear, grabbed our bows. We got ready real quick, and we headed out into the mountains. So day one of hunting, we encountered some, well, Neil, I'll let you talk about day one. Like I said, I was going to let you talk about it. I've been rambling on for a while, and I want to hear from these other guys too. So Neil, why don't you go ahead and do kind of a roll up on day one of the hunt?
Sure. I'd like to start off with just saying it's a day I'd rather forget. Now, it was mostly my fault. I made several mistakes that were very costly at the end of the day. Probably wasn't hydrated enough. I thought I drank enough water on Sunday. That wasn't the case. As far as getting up, that morning to actually do the hunt, I don't believe I ate anything. You know, I was excited to get out, get ready, get going on this hunt. And I paid for that as well. We started up the trailhead there. And right off the bat, I had a few issues. I had to take care of some business, remove some clothing because, well, once you start climbing, your body temperature shoots up pretty good. So I got that taken care of, and on up the mountain we went. And when I say we went up the mountain, well, we literally went up the mountain. Plans changed from the initial plan. Was take it easy the first few days, acclimate ourselves to the climate and terrain, and you know, so we didn't have any accidents or burnouts or whatever you want to call it. Like I said, when we got off the trail and literally started climbing the mountain, and I wasn't ready for that. Wasn't expecting that. So yeah, that was a bit tough on the old cat here. It really tested the old body and mind. Without all the details, ended up at a point where I just couldn't physically climb anymore. We had already had reached what I thought was the summit of this mountain, and those guys were like, well, we got to go further to go camp. And I'm like, okay. And I think I'd told Chad a few times. I said, man, I'm beat, man. My legs are pretty smoked. Well, I tried to soldier on and just got to a point where I couldn't do it. So I sat down and was tired. Gus came down the mountain and found me probably 20 minutes later, I told him what was going on. He said, all right. We went up and got Chad. They both came back down the mountain. We devised a quick plan to get out of there as quickly as possible. Unfortunately, that meant descending the mountain the way we came, which was almost as bad as hiking up the mountain. Long story short, we made it. By the end of it, I was literally walking by myself. Gus took my fully loaded pack. Chad was carrying my bow. But we made her back down to the vehicle and regrouped and went on with that evening. And yeah, I tell you what, don't take anything for granted, man. I mean, it was a bummer that things turned out that way for everyone involved, just not myself. I didn't feel like we got much hunting done, even though there was calling and stuff going on the ascent up the mountain. But, in essence, just make sure you are hydrated, you've eaten something, and you're ready to hunt. It was a mistake that will not happen again. So, yeah, but in a nutshell, that was Monday. I honestly would rather forget that entire day. So that's all I gotta say about that.
Yeah, that day was pretty hard on. I know it was hard on me too, and I don't know how bad it was on Gus. I don't think it was that bad because Gus, we could never get him to say that he was beat down, but he's certainly a lot younger than us and in better shape and lives at the altitude. So, that was a tough day, and I think there's a big takeaway there that acclimation period really does need to happen. We kind of took it for granted. We were all feeling pretty good. We had gotten there into around 8,000 feet elevation the day prior. We had camped at 8,000 feet of elevation. And I think we were just kind of thinking that one day of acclimation was going to be enough. Neil, there was several factors that I think kind of went into that. And one of the major ones was he had come down with a pretty nasty head cold and sinus issues a few days prior to the drive. So before he even made it out there, he was already having some sinus issues, which certainly at altitude creates a bigger problem when you want to throw altitude, dry air, just kind of the entire change from the environment that he lives in Indiana. So I think the lesson to be learned there is if you're coming from some lower elevation somewhere where you're not used to those high mountains, don't try to be the hero or whatever you want to call it, the super hunter, and just charge up the side of the mountain to 10,500 feet. Take your time getting up there. In hindsight, of course, I can look back and tell you probably 10 different ways we could have approached it differently, but we didn't. So we could have camped right there where you said you thought it was the summit and we still had places to go. We could have popped up our camp right there and just set up for the evening and been good to go, but we didn't. So, ultimately, that day was pretty punishing to Neil, and it was punishing to myself, too. But because of the issues that we encountered, and Neil suffered from pretty serious dehydration, he had to sit out the whole day, too. So, when we got back to the trucks from finally descending the mountain, getting out, you know, coming out to the trailhead, we went and found a campsite instead of camping up in the mountains. We went and found a campsite that was on lower elevation and next to the river so that we had some hydration and, you know, place to cook and all that stuff. So that ultimately impacted the Neil's hunt in a pretty major way. Out of six days that we were able to hunt, he lost an entire day. Take that as whatever, you know, lesson learned from us. And if you use it in the future, then great that you heard it. So day two, moving into day two, Neil was recovering that day, which is probably the right thing to do. I'm really glad he didn't choose to. We woke him up and asked him if he wanted to go with us. And he said, no, he wanted to hydrate and really get himself ready. That way he was, you know, full of strength and energy for the rest of the week. And I think that was absolutely the right decision to make that day. I'm sure it was tough. I know it was tough, Neil. It had to be tough to say you were going to stay back that day. Probably
right thing. It was.
Yeah.
But I knew it was right.
Yeah. So, So anyway, that brings us into the second day, and this was me and Gus, and we headed out that morning. I want to say we woke up a little bit late. Not much. I mean, it was not like we woke up around 10 o'clock in the morning or anything. We were definitely up before daylight, had our cup of coffee, and we were leaving camp while it was still dark. But I want to say, Gus, I'll let you run with this, but I want to say, didn't we get to the trailhead just as sunlight was coming up?
Yeah, so we got to the trailhead at right about that perfect time to where you want to kind of be at your hunting spot, is what I would say. And it wasn't a big deal just because we only had maybe like, you know, maybe 3/4 of a mile of trail to walk before we were, you know, back on public ground and hunting again. You know, we had to cut through that quick bit of private on that trail. That second day was kind of when we started elk hunting. I mean, for sure, at least that's when I got motivated again, because we were getting into elk. Right at the trailhead, there was a bull bugling. Of course, he was on private land, but he was screaming his head off and he wouldn't shut up. So, if nothing else, I know for a fact, I like to just listen to elk bugle like that. So that got me fired up right out of the gate. We humped it up the trail. You know, there wasn't really nothing crazy about that. It was just a walk up a trail. It was a real pretty morning. I remember it was a little cool, which was nice. And then when we got to the top, it was, it kind of tabled out into this bowl, and it was way, way cooler than I was expecting it to be. This trail kind of just eased its way through these patches of meadows. And so once we got up on top, we, started the game plan, I guess, and pretty much just walk and call until something kicks up. And so we did that. I think it was like on our, I don't know, 9th or 10th stop that morning. Ripped a bugle down into this. Well, it wasn't really a drainage, just kind of across this hillside, and got a response. He was pretty far out. So Chad and I sat there for a second and kind of tried to figure out the best way to approach, and made a determination and moved in on him. You know, we had quite a bit of distance to cover before we were getting close, but he started moving in on him a little bit, and he just shut up at that point. Couldn't get him to respond for you know, anything. Ended up stopping on a drainage, or, you know, not a drainage, just kind of a little ditch, just a small little draw. Did some cold calling. That didn't work, so we kind of just, you know, figured, well, he doesn't want to play, so I don't want to play with him. And got back onto the game plan, and we were kind of just working our way, and we'd come across some more, you know, kind of open patchy meadows, and got into one, and it was starting to get into that point where the thermals were starting to switch around, and I decided that we were going to just stop and take a second and kind of just look at maps and figure out how we were going to hunt the rest of this thing out, and then try to get to a burn that Chad had picked out that he really wanted to get into. So we did that, and ended up having what became a mandatory morning coffee break. And that was the key to the rest of the week's success. So we did that and stopped and kind of made a game plan. And once we picked up our stuff, and I don't know, we were just kind of like, well, let's see what happens. We'll just see how this goes. You know, we weren't like sneaking around or being real serious, but busted back into the timber and came across another little draw. And I stopped and just ripped a bugle down into it. And that bull piped off about maybe 150 to 200 yards across that ditch, you know, and almost level with us. So, you know, that pretty much turned into game time. And Chad, you might be able to explain a little bit better what happened, because that's when I kind of started seeing red.
Yeah, that's a good term for that, I think. Gus's eyes just roll back in his head, and we see in red, I guess, is what it is when he starts calling for bulls and bugling and stuff when he's got one on the hook. So Gus was, once we heard that bull at about 150 yards, Gus sent me up. You know, he put me in a nice little spot and said, get up there. If he comes down, he's going to come down this hillside, whatever. He kind of explained the scenario to me pretty very close to how it went. So that, like I said, his knowledge and experience there was key. So he put me where he wanted me, or where he thought that that bull was going to come down. And then Gus dropped back a little bit and started just going through a calling sequence, which included, you know, raking the trees and bugling and cow calling and back to raking trees. And he was just back there chopping down wood, it sounded like to me. So he was just doing it. And that bull was bugling back, and then he would rake some trees and cow call and bugle. The bull would bugle back. And eventually, I mean, I could kind of hear the bull working his way in up until maybe 100 yards or so. And then the bull just kind of went quiet. And that bull just slipped right up on me. It's amazing to me. This was my first encounter, keep in mind. So, you know, I didn't really have the experience to understand how they move. But it's amazing to me how quiet those animals can move through the woods. I mean, they're massive, and they have these massive antlers, and I just figured you would hear them just come crashing through the trees and tearing everything with them. And this thing came in completely silent and walked up to within 15 to 20 yards from me. And unfortunately, where the bull stopped, he stopped perfectly in line where the only shooting lane that I had, there was a tree in the way, and that tree was covering all of the vital organs on that bull. So I had no shot to take. Plus, there was kind of a big pine tree that was there too, and one of the branches of the pine tree was covering the rack on the bull. So I couldn't verify for sure. I was pretty sure just by the sound of the bugle, it sounded like a big bull, but you never know for sure. But I couldn't see the antlers, so I had no idea if it was legal size or not. Because in Colorado, you can't just shoot any spike or bull that's out there. There's a regulation. So I couldn't verify that. So I couldn't verify that it was legal, and I had no shot at the vitals. So I wasn't even going to draw my bow back until I could identify both of those things. Anyway, so the way the sequence and the calling and everything went down brought that bull within 15 yards. And I don't know if it winded me or if it saw Gus or saw me winded Gus or just all of the above. I don't know what it was, but that bull spun around and took off. And that was the end of that encounter. The bull kind of bugled as it was leaving. And we tried to bring him back in, or Gus tried to bring him back in, but he wasn't having it. He was getting out of there. So. Yeah, like I said, that was pretty much the end of that encounter. And that was my first ever encounter with a bull. And I wish I could have, barely worked an arrow in there somewhere and been able to see that he was legal and all that and made it happen. But to me, it was better safe than sorry. I mean, the worst thing that possibly could have happened would be to wound a non-legal bull. that would be the most horrible thing. That was that encounter that we had. And that kind of wrapped up day two, if I remember right, didn't it, Gus?
Yeah.
For the most part.
For the most part.
We didn't really have any more encounters with elk that day.
We made the determination. So I don't think he winded us just because of how he acted. I mean, he didn't like take off running. You know, he spun around. He popped a couple branches and stuff like that on his way out. But he was bugling pretty good on his way out. So I figured I really think that he saw me because you guys were kind of up on that little finger. That little finger ridge, and I was kind of down below you. So I really think that he just, because when I started moving up to you or trying to get up to you, because nothing had happened for like 10 minutes. I started trying to sneak up to you, and right when I started moving is when I heard the elk have a very like very distinct branch breaking sound whenever they take off. Like every time I've ever heard an elk blow out, it sounds exactly like that. So I heard that and I knew something went wrong. And I didn't know how close he was to you though, so that was pretty cool. But yeah, we kind of threw another move on him real quick to see if we could get him, to come back around or whatever. And he wasn't having it, so I figured, we sat down and looked at the maps and kind of figured that he might have gone up over on top to the north face. And we started looking at maps and stuff like that and figuring out what our next game plan was going to be for the next day, and then just kind of eased our way out, picked up Neil, and ended up moving camps that afternoon, and then did a quick evening hunt on the top side of where we were. But yeah, as far as encounters and stuff go, that was kind of wrapped up day two. Which, it's really good to wrap up a day with an elk at 15 yards, in my opinion. So,
yeah, that was a pretty good way to do it. So, by the time that happened, and you know, we were done with the encounter and figuring out, looking at the maps and taking a break and everything, it was getting pretty late in the morning, almost into the afternoon, and we kind of found ourselves a little creek, and we refilled on water and had some lunch, and then we decided at that point that we were just going to make our way out of the woods because we knew it was going to take us a couple hours to get out and back down to the campsite. So we wanted to link back up with Neil and try to get up higher. So we were going to go move the camp and move to higher ground, which that's what we did. So got back out of the mountain. By the time we got back down to camp, Neil was coming back from town. He was picking up some essential camping supplies that we needed, some steaks and, you know, just some other stuff. Because, like I said before, originally we were intending to camp out in the mountains. So now that we had the luxury of being camping at an actual campsite, there was some necessities that we needed for the campsite. So on Neil's down day, he went in town, got him some Gatorade, got himself rehydrated, picked up some things to bring back to camp. And we moved the camp that night. We moved up to higher ground, hoping that we would find that herd that we ran out of that spot that Gus and I were in. I'm not going to hit too hard on the next few days. There was we did have a day in there. I want to say it was day four. We did some moving around, and on day three, four, and five, we did some moving around to a couple of different campsites and different hunting sites. And we did a lot of calling and just a lot of walking. You know, we were covering on average about 10 miles a day. We were just going through and eliminating places that we had originally looked at thinking they might be good hunting areas. And we were just checking them off the list that they weren't, you know, they weren't what we were looking for. So we did have one day where we ran into some pretty nasty. Well, we woke up to some pretty nasty rain. We decided, you know, we woke up at regular time. We were up nice and early, got moving, got headed out of the tents, and kind of figured regardless of the situation and what the weather is, you're definitely not going to put anything on the ground if we were sitting in the tent. So got up and dealt with some of that rainy weather that had come in that night before. And I know
Neil really had fun that morning.
Yeah.
At least right out of the gate.
Yeah. It was pretty sloppy that day. Gus was probably, I think I was in pretty good shape as far as boots and pants and, you know, clothing and everything. I got a little bit wet, but no big deal. Neil was in good shape. And poor Gus, man. Waterproof boots. His weren't so waterproof. Little tag on the side of them that said waterproof. And Gus, at one point in time, we stopped to take a little break, and Gus poured enough water out of his boots that I probably could have made a cup of coffee with it. I know I could have made a cup of coffee.
Yeah, no cap.
Easily. So, and then of course he was wringing out his socks and just, you know, trying to get his socks back to where he could put them back. Of course, I'm sitting there thinking, I know how wet feet go. I've been in the Army a long time, and coming up through the combat world, I've dealt with wet socks many times, and it's miserable. And you look over, and Gus is just sitting there. He's like, oh, no, I'm from Oregon. This is nothing. We could pour way more water out of our boots than what I just poured out. No big deal.
It's it comes to the territory I'm not going to sit there and lie to you like I like having wet feet. Like, that's definitely not the truth. But when, I don't know, I seem to I lack that filter between the brain and the rest of your body that tells you what to do and what not to do typically. But when it comes to elk season, that filter seems to get a lot more clogged up. So I just kind of deal with a lot more It wasn't bad though. It was just a little water.
Just a little moist, that's all. So
ooh.
Yeah.
So anyway, rough day, not really a rough day, just a wet day. And if you've been out there before, you know how it goes. And it's just one of them mornings where you embrace the suck and you just kind of keep on moving. And eventually the sun's going to come out and you can dry yourself out and then you're good to go.
And that's the thing. It was a beautiful morning. I was like, that was probably my most excited morning just because the way the weather was, and it was a lot cooler. And I don't know, those things, I was giddy that morning, and we ended up chasing a bull, too.
We covered a lot of ground that morning.
We covered, well, just each day we were covering around 10 miles. But yeah, that morning, I want to say we covered around 6, and then later, that afternoon, we ended up getting another 4 or 5, so. But I want to say we chased 2 different bulls that day, because there was one that we were pretty sure was the same bull day 2 when it was Gus and I, and then there was another one that had a totally different sounding bugle that we chased around for a little bit too. So we were into them for a couple times that day.
Yeah, that was another good one. It's just that spot, and you'll hear it all the time. And the more you hunt these damn animals, the more you'll realize they put themselves in the worst positions possible for anything else but them, just because that hillside, the wind, every time we hunted that area, the wind just would not help us out at all, and they know that, so that's where they like to do. And that was a vibe, without a doubt, a wind issue that morning when we moved in on them.
Yeah, there was times on that day where Gus would be 15 feet from me, maybe 10, 15 feet, and he would pull out his wind check and puff a couple wind checks, and they would go one direction, and I'm standing behind him, and I would hit my wind checker, and it would go the other direction. So the wind was just swirling all over the place. We were really struggling with that. And then by the time that we chased both of those bulls around, they were both just gone, and we assumed that we were just blowing everything out of that whole area that we were in, because that was
I think they'd had enough of our nonsense.
Yeah. So that led us to start to think about moving. Later that night, we went to a completely, I mean, it was in the same unit, but a completely different hunting area that was about 15 miles away, maybe 10 to 15 miles away from where we had originally established and set up camp and all that stuff. Not a big deal. We just jumped in the trucks and went over and truck scouting and looking around at the area, and then found the spot we wanted to go into. And we went into that area and we saw a ton of sign and a ton of tracks and, you know, some crap on the ground, and just, we saw a lot of stuff. It just all looked old, like 3 or 4 days old, or, you know, I mean, I don't really know how to date all that stuff, but, it, you could definitely tell it wasn't from that morning. It was a lot of pressure. We saw a lot of trucks, and we saw a lot of, well, we didn't really see other hunters, but there was a lot of trucks in that area. All we can do is assume other hunters have blown them out, and, you know, we were just a little too late in that area. So, I think after that, that took us to town, and we grabbed a big fat cheeseburger somewhere, if I remember.
That's exactly what happened.
So,
bacon cheeseburgers.
And the funny thing, really quick, when we were sitting at that restaurant, it was the three of us, and we're sitting in the back and kind of tired from beating ourselves up for 4 or 5 days, you know, and a little bit down because we hadn't killed anything yet. And here come another big group of, I think it was 4 hunters, and they all came in, and they looked just as exhausted, and they hadn't shot anything yet, and they were in there getting their cheeseburgers too. So, it's kind of funny to see that other group of guys come wandering in. But so anyway, back to camp that night. And then the plan was the next morning. Well, we got up and hunted a little bit. And then after that, we just decided we were going to make a big move. And we ended up moving over to another totally different over-the-counter unit, where same unit, same area where Gus had killed a bull a couple weeks prior. So we were kind of, you know, thinking that we knew there was elk in there. Gus was really, really familiar with the area, and we just wanted to go check it out. We had a solid half of a day to get in there and really hunt that area, and then potentially sometime the next morning too. So we made that move, and we ended up in this other unit, and we picked up another hunter, another friend of ours, Jordan, and headed up the mountain. After everybody kind of came together, we all linked up over at Gus's house, so it was convenient. He lived in the area, and met up with Jordan, and then we all jumped in the trucks, and or in Neil's truck there, and we headed up the side of the mountain and started hunting for that evening. And how about this, Gus, if you want to talk about the first part of that evening, and then we'll let Neil bring it home with his portion of it.
You said something that struck my memory of that night, which was, you know, a really awesome night. But we headed up the mountain, and we headed up the mountain on what is probably more suitable for a four-wheeler or an ATV or something like that. The Toyota Tacoma would definitely do it. But Neil made sure that it happened. And I found out that night that Neil does not believe in the left pedal. It's only the right. So,
well, that's no joke.
which was totally cool. But and this was, you know, way new to me now that I've been living in Colorado. But they don't call them the Rocky Mountain for no reason. And these roads get some pretty bad ways sometimes. But we just kept hitting that right pedal, and not like just tapping it. I think it was on the floor and just stayed that way. So that was cool. My original plan was kind of to get, you know, just do the same thing we've been doing in this area where, you know, I didn't know if there were elk there or not. And I'd killed my bull there. I knew that there was some elk in there, but I don't, you know, they move so much. But I had that confidence in the area, which is key a lot of times. So we were going to go give her one last hurrah. Got up there. It was hot that night. I remember it was hot. Remember that afternoon. So we ended up sitting here at the shop and just kind of recouping for quite a bit. Did the whole thing, got on this old road, just started screaming, ripping bugles into every draw that we came across from three different angles. Played it up there, got to an old stock pond that's up there. Kind of sat around, you know, just, it was really, it seemed to be more like the elk aren't talking, or there's not elk here, you know, we're just kind of hanging out. It was more like just a good way to bring it all back around. Like, we'd almost, I don't want to say accepted defeat, but we kind of, you know, we were just on that level of like, we're just out here, a bunch of dudes in the woods having a good time, which is, you know, I love doing that. So got all the way to the top and nothing had happened. So we farted around there for a second and then kind of started making our way back down. And we were going to basically just kind of do the same thing on our way out. I'm not really sure kind of where gear switched a little bit. I had a bear tag in the area, so we were kind of, you know, there was a lot of bear in that area. And so we were kind of looking like, hey, if we see a bear, I'll go shoot that thing. If we see an elk, we'll go shoot that. Like, we're just kind of, you know, anything that we could shoot, basically, if it popped out, we were going to at least give it a shot or an attempt. And then that's when things started to change a little bit in the atmosphere. So, Neil, if you want to take it off, because I know that this was the highlight of, and I think it was kind of pretty cool for Neil too.
Absolutely. So. like Gus said, we're heading down the mountain, and nobody said it, but the hunt was over. We're going back to Gus's house. Gonna get our first shower in 6 days. We're farting around, laughing, horsing around, and a bugle happened. So we stop, and everybody's like, did we just hear that? You know, yeah, sure enough, we heard it. And so Gus rips off on his bugle tube. And sure enough, we get a call right back, and it was on. I believe Jordan said it just got real, and it did. And Gus and Jordan took off, and me and Chad followed. And, I mean, we're talking, we're jumping over deadfalls and blasting through that scrub oak. Now, if you guys have never experienced scrub oak, which I did not until my Colorado trip, this stuff is like, you know, the horror movies with the bony fingers that they show grabbing at you from every which way. That's what scrub oak is. It will snag anything on your body, your equipment, and try and take it from you. So we're flying, busting through this stuff. And we would stop every, you know, however far it was, and Gus would rip off a bugle, and this guy was, he was ready to play, man. I mean, he's screaming back at us. So we get to a point where it's time to knock arrows and get this done, and we're kind of creeping up there, and Gus is a little bit ahead of me, and I literally get right up to him, and he's like, "Dick!" And he's throwing his hat, and he's mad, and he's pissed off, and he goes, "He was right there." I mean, literally, the bull was 7-10 feet away. I don't know. It was very close. I heard him shuffling up the mountain. So I'm like, okay, well, we continued to hunt this guy. And I mean, he is screaming in our face. He's wanting to play. We're definitely wanting to play. And it got to a point where, lost track of time. I'm just in the moment, and Gus come up and he says, "Hey, can you see your sight pins?" And I said, no, I can't. So we'd pretty much lost light. Chad was still able to see his for a few more minutes, so we continued on, and then we just ran the light, man. I mean, 20 more minutes or so, we had a very good chance of getting on this bull. So amazing, amazing hunt. It was the most exciting hunt I've ever been on in my life. I mean, I was smile on my face, ear to ear, man. I mean, you couldn't wipe it off. It was amazing moment. Yeah, I'll remember that forever. So.
Yeah, that was a good one. I remember, so to kind of caveat what you were saying, the horror movie trees grabbing at you. That's a really good, I never thought of that analogy for scrub oak, but there was a couple of times where I was rolling across the tops of trees, it felt like, trying to get through that stuff. And yeah, so it was so thick, just for everyone listening, that I had taken one step and I saw his ass, the bull's ass flash, and I heard him take off. And that was that he was about 15 feet. And all I saw was a quick flash of light. And obviously, I mean, you know, you can smell elk when you're in them like that. And it was an elk running away. So I don't think it was anyone, you know, out there with a pillowcase on trying to be a ghost. But that's how thick it was. And then, that's when I started throwing a fit for a second, and I got a little, things got a little personal between me and that bull. And, yeah, we went back after him and just run out of daylight in that thick nonsense.
Yeah. So when my portion of it was not nearly as intense or involved as what Neil and Gus. Me and Jordan were kind of standing back a little bit. Just, I had my bow, and at times I had an arrow knocked and ready to go, but not all the time. You know, I was trying to keep the broadhead kind of out of the way. And Neil was the primary shooter. So it was cool for me because I got to watch, instead of like on day two, where I couldn't really see what Gus was doing behind me, making all that noise. I got to see how all that was going on and there is a, at that point, I really knew what Gus meant when he said, I saw red. Because there was times where I don't think Gus really knew what was going on. He was so into the moment, man. We're raking, destroying trees, tearing stuff up, bugling. And it was it almost seemed like it was synchronized, but I know there was no synchronization to it. He was just going with it. It was, like he said a minute ago, it was very, very personal between him and that bull. It was pretty impressive to watch it all. And then I would look over to try to figure out where Neil was at to make sure that everything was being kind of coordinated. And, you know, Neil's over there just locked on and he's ready to go. So the whole event was just cool from that a little bit behind the scene perspective. And it was really, really cool to see it. And then once we got, you know, and Neil couldn't see his pins anymore. So then I, you know, at that point I had an arrow knocked and ready to go and everything was ready and I could still see my pins. And I don't think it was even 5 minutes. I think it was like two or three before I kept checking the pins and there was just nothing left. There was absolutely no light left. So we called it, did the right thing. We backed out of the situation that we were in. Gus was bugling and cow calling. We were making our way out of there, and he was making a lot of noise to make it sound like it was a bull moving his cows out of the area. We did that for quite a ways in the pitch black, in the scrub oak, and deadfall and blowdowns. It was horrible getting out of this area. It was bad, and it was nasty, and it was thick, and it was dark. So none of that helped. And we didn't want to do headlamps because obviously we didn't want to spook that bull up there. The plan was to get up the next morning and come out and give it a go for a few hours and just try one last time. So we were hoping that he would calm down and keep his cows up there and he would stay in that area, but he didn't. Unfortunately, we got out of there. It was nasty. And the next morning we got up and we came back out and there was nothing out there. We called for, maybe about 4 hours, Gus, something like that. We climbed up to the top of the mountain and called for a while and we got nothing. And then by that time, it was time for me to get off the mountain and hit the road. So,
that was about how that went. Is just, went with the same game plan and it didn't really come to fruition. So we were running on a condensed schedule that morning.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely, it was. But it was good. We got out there and tried. I mean, it was in that we were in the situation to where if we would have killed a bull, I had enough time where, and I had enough leniency where, you know, I definitely could have stayed around and cleaned it. Scanned it out, and you know, I could have taken the extra day if I needed to, but I did kind of need to get on the road. So we called it a damn good hunt. I know we did. I walked away super happy with the way everything went. It was an absolute blast for a week of hunting. Met new friends, you know, hung out with good people and old friends. So super cool.
No, it was an epic week. And I know there's going to be some guys that listen to this and they're going to say like, damn, your first encounter both of you guys, your first encounter with elk were like both coming into like 15 feet or, you know, 15 yards at least inside that top 10 range, which is the best range in my mind. And that, I know I'm jealous of it because that is not how it went for me for quite a few years, but I just know a lot of really good ways not to kill elk. So that's what my experience is. It's not, you say I have experience and knowledge. I'm really just really good at not killing elk. So
I tell you,
I know a lot of ways. I know a lot of ways not
some,
to do it.
Some people call them failures. I call them lessons learned. And that way you can walk away happy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't think there's any failure there because, you know, we'd already talked about it, and an elk on the on the ground would just been a bonus for this hunt, because you know, you're looking at an approximate 10% kill rate on public land, and then you have two new hunters who have literally no idea what they were doing, and that percentage goes way down. So, as fortunate as we were, in large part thanks to Gus, to get on elk as often as we did, that was pretty amazing in itself right there. Yeah, great.
And I totally agree with you, Neil, because I think on one of the other takes of this podcast when we recorded it, we had said it, and it didn't get said this time. But I know for a fact that having an experienced hunter with us, or failed hunter, whatever you want to call yourself, Gus, but having somebody that's experienced it before completely changed the way that we hunted. Because I know going into it, the plan that I had was not nearly, we probably wouldn't have covered near as much ground as we covered. I don't think we would have ended up in another unit somewhere. I think we probably would have stuck to plan A, plan B, or plan C, and we would have beat those three up until the hunt was over. But having somebody there that had, you know, had the knowledge to say, hey man, plan A didn't work. Day one is done. Let's go to plan B. Hit plan B. Plan B didn't really work. Scratch it off the list. We're going to plan C and plan D. And, you know, we probably worked into G and H. And I don't think Neil and I would have done that. So it was.
Right. I agree.
Well, I know we made it all the way to pro tip, 1687? Yeah. Something like that. Yep. So we were definitely working our way down the list.
We did have a lot of pro tips. We need to write all of them down. But anyway, so. That was the hunt, and I mean, we're not done with the podcast yet, but we are done talking about the hunt, and I can't wait till next year, and I hope we get this group of guys together next year, and we do it again. Hopefully, we'll have Jordan with us for the full time, and you know, we'll get something on the ground, but if not, we'll definitely have fun again, so.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to next year. I hope that it all works out. Might be sitting in a position to draw the coveted Oregon win the hot tag next year. So if I do, then my dates might shift around a little bit, but I definitely am going to be out with you guys for, you know, at least a couple of days or whatever the season allows.
You don't want to turn that thing in and come hunt with me and Neil? What the hell, man? That's not right.
Well, you know, I don't know. It's a pretty prestigious tag, yeah, they say. Okay. So I've been in Winnaha a couple of times, and for what? Yeah, that's one of those ones you probably should just go do if you're going to draw in Oregon. Fine.
So moving on from the hunt talk, let's talk a little bit about gear. And one of the things that we've been covering is the things that you took that you had in your pack that are not going to go back next year, and then things that you are going to pick up that you're going to use next year that you needed in your pack and it wasn't there. And I'll let you go first, Neil. Go ahead and kind of wrap up your thoughts on your gear.
Well, let's get a little brief rundown of pretty much everything I had as far as clothing, gear, and whatnot. I had First Light ASAT clothing, which was top notch. No complaints there at all. Merrill boxer briefs, my absolute favorite piece of gear, and I've said it 100 times, but are the First Light Mountain Triad socks, which are absolutely amazing, A+, 100%, Vosk all leather boots, everything performed spectacular, no trouble with clothing, so. Highly recommend that stuff. Merino wool is the bomb. You gotta have it. I mean, we were out there, you know, bird bathing it, no showers for 5 days, and that stuff really held up well. So, really recommend that. I used a Bushnell Roam one-man tent. Once again, I give that an A+. Easy to set up. Completely waterproof. We got heavy I wouldn't say heavy, but it rained a long time. What was it, Wednesday night, whatever. For several hours, never an issue with water there. Tent did really well. I had a mummy bag for a sleeping bag, which, unfortunately, the mummy bags, which was unaware to me, they closed down narrow at the feet, and that kept me very constricted and actually caused me some sleeping issues throughout the week. That will not be coming back with me. I will probably look into what Chad had with the quilt and look into something like that instead of a bag. I mean, because of the fact they're lighter, probably easier to pack, so that may be a real option for me. As far as, I mean, my pack, I had some issues with it, which is key. I mean, you got to remember, boots in your pack are your key items. I mean, they both have to fit, and they both have to fit really well. I didn't quite have the pack dialed in. I clearly remember on one of the earlier podcasts with Corey Jacobs, and that was his number one tip. Make sure that pack is dialed in, guys. And it's very true. If you don't have it dialed in, you will have issues. I think we finally got her about the third, somewhere into the third day, I got it fitting better. It did cause some abrasion on my shoulders, but nothing too serious. But that will definitely be something I will address. The one problem, I had an Eberle stock elk pack, which is what I used. And the waist strap, the way it's configured and made, it's very thin. And it would not hold my pistol. So, I'm sure it's probably doable with a different style of holster. But with what I had, it did not work. Not a huge deal. Like I said, I'm sure there's a way around it. But with what I brought, it just didn't work out. But, other than that, I borrowed Chad had brought a jet boil and MSR pocket rocket for our heating, our water and stuff, and I used the pocket rocket quite a bit. The cool thing about that thing is it fits in a tiny little plastic container. I mean tiny. You pop it out there and undo the arms and screw on your little butane canister, and it's ready to rock. Take back from it, it's twice as slow as the jet boil. The jet boil is way faster at the expense of being a little harder to pack due to its size. But they were both, you know, pick your poison. The jet boil is obviously faster, but a lot larger and takes up more space in your pack. So we did some, I had Mountain House. I brought that was my food stuff for the week and was really happy with that. No issues. A lot of food there. Sometimes I couldn't finish the whole portion. Basically, you drank straight water the entire time, except for my rehydration issue there. But, yeah, that's as far as my gear goes. Pretty happy with everything. Bow held up well. I'll tell you what, though. I mean, we running it through that forest and scrub brush and everything, your equipment will take a beating. I have a Expedition Eccentric, and man, that thing, the string was the first day we realized we were carrying it string towards the body, and that just rubbed our string raw, and we had to remedy that real quick and took care of that situation. So that's something you want to keep in mind. I had to actually go buy string wax Tuesday, so that's something you may want to put in your pack list. It may seem like an easy thing to remember, but it wasn't. Real happy with everything. Make some small changes. I had bought a poncho, those little solar blankets, you know. In fact, I gave them to the guys, and not needed. They don't take up much space, but we just didn't use them. I'll go ahead and let somebody else gabble on their gear here for a
So I want to defend the pocket rocket a little bit. I love the jet boil, and I'll talk about that here in a minute. But with the pocket rocket, so I had an old Army stainless steel canteen, and I let Neil, when I let him borrow the pocket rocket, I just, the only extra cup that I had here at the house was one of, was that old Army canteen. So I let him borrow both of them. And I really think that if he had a good quality GSI mug or something, you know, that was a good mug and not military grade, it would have cut down a lot on that cooking time or that boiling time for water and all that. Not that it mattered. I mean, we're talking about a minute here, but if you're trying to use a can of fuel and you're trying to make one small can of fuel last for a week, that extra 30 to 45 seconds that it takes to boil water can mean a lot when it comes down to day 7, day 8, and that kind of stuff. So I think the pocket rocket works really, really well. And with the, you know, paired up with the right cup, I think it would do a lot better. So anyway, that was that. That's my little thing there. Sorry. And Gus, if you want to talk a little bit about your year, that'd be perfect.
Yeah. So quick, just from the floor up, Danner Vital Boots, which I still personally believe are an epic pair of boots. They're lightweight, they're soft, they're quiet, they're comfortable. However, comma, and maybe I just got that one pair. The waterproofness really, really didn't do it for me. Now, I understand waterproof, you know, it's kind of a loose term. And if you're standing in the creek for a while, like, you're going to get wet. That day that we were out where I was pouring water out of my boots and the whole thing, it wasn't even raining when we started walking. That was just residual water from the bushes and the trees and everything. So I feel like maybe they should have held up just a tad bit better if they're going to call themselves waterproof and not water resistant. But that didn't really bug me. I definitely would recommend those boots to anybody that I talk to. I just let them know. I use Kink Camo, XKG. I don't have any complaints. They do. It's great stuff. There's a lot of great stuff out there. My pack is a Mystery Ranch, and I can't tell you the model because I don't know it. I've looked everywhere, and I can't find the model. I didn't buy it. It was just one of those things that I ended up having to get through the Army. So that was pretty cool. But, yeah, it is by far, from what I've used, I mean, I've only used kind of cheaper packs, but definitely the best day pack that I think you could probably have. If you want to do overnight stuff, though, it doesn't have a lot of room. Mine doesn't. There's a lot of Mystery Ranch bags out there that do. I have no affiliation with them, so don't think that you had to buy Mystery Ranch. But I would say one thing I would change for sure, had we stuck with the original plan of staying out for, you know, 3 or 4 nights at a time, a bigger bag definitely would have been helpful because I was able to fit everything that I needed in my pack with the exception of my sleeping gear, which I had to basically kind of take a couple carabiners and clip to the pack or to the outside of my backpack with my sleeping bag and stuff like that. So that would definitely be something I change should I start doing, you know, more overnight hunts. But I'm typically kind of more of a spike camp dude. I like to cover more ground. I don't want to be stuck in one area, you know, within walking distance. So, it works for me. Without a doubt, my jet boil, which was the first year I've ever used one, or first year I got one, played a huge role in just a little bit of happiness. Like Chad said, the MSRP or MSRs are probably awesome paired with the right cup. Jet boils are a little cumbersome, but they're not that heavy. And I think that space that you kind of take up with them is definitely worth it just because how quick that they fire up. And I don't know. It was a huge help to me. So that's definitely what I would do. The next couple things that I recommend having a couple extra of, or making sure that you have the right, is, and these are by far aside from my bow and my release and stuff like that, when I'm hunting out in the elk woods, which are kind of the obvious non-essentials or obvious essentials, is you got to have, make sure that your calls, like calls are a huge one to me. So you don't have to have like 17 different type of calls or reads in your bag. Make sure that you have the one that fits you and it's the right one. Don't just pick up one. I use Rocky Mountain hunting calls, and that's just my preference. I've used Primos. I've used Wayne Carlton stuff. I haven't used a Phelps reed yet, but I know that they're real good. I'm the type of person that if I find something I like, I stick with it until it doesn't work for me anymore. So that's kind of why I do that. And they've never steered me wrong. So do that for sure. And then I think probably it's definitely like the top three, top two most important things that I carry with me is an Onyx map system. And I was actually kind of frustrated with Onyx a lot this year just because the maps wouldn't want to load or, you know, and I save them and everything, but the contour lines aren't always the best. So don't let that deceive you, but to have that private property, or private public, lines, I think is worth the money in itself. So Onyx has a whole bunch of other layers that'll work at any time that you want them to. By far, Onyx is definitely probably my number two or number one thing that I'll have with me at any given time. And this is my first year using them as well.
Cool. Yeah. So I'm a big Onyx fan also. I used it the whole time that we were out in Colorado. And then just this past weekend, used it the whole time I was hunting out in West Texas also. So, and it actually worked out really good because there's a lot of, I was hunting on private land in West Texas, and private land butts up against private land. And there was a few times where I was getting really, really close to that the boundary lines between the two privates. So having that Onyx, I knew exactly where I needed to stop and turn around and then head back in a different direction. So.
And that's the thing. It's huge. And the cool thing is when you download that map, it'll tell you, you can be on airplane mode or whatever it is. It'll tell you exactly where you are. And I said I was frustrated with them a few times, but that was only because it took, you know, maybe 45 seconds for everything to get situated opposed to its normal just five. So that was just me being, you know, more of a diva than anything. But it's huge. And I've been on state land and private land boundaries before and not known it. I just pulled up my map and I saw that I was on the right on the boundary, and then I looked up and I saw a sign that said, you know, National Forest or whatever it was. So I was really impressed with Onyx.
Yeah.
No, definitely. I'll always,
yeah, have them. The only trick is you just have to remember, and once you've played with them a few times, download your maps prior to going into airplane mode. Because obviously you're not going to have them if you don't already have them downloaded. So that's just kind of one of those.
Yeah, I made that mistake a few times.
I didn't go into Colorado, but I had when I very first started messing with it. And that kind of goes, so I want to touch on something and then I'll touch on my gear. It kind of goes back to what Neil was saying about getting his pack set up and getting his pack ready. A lot of this stuff, like I was really, really happy with my gear. I only have a couple of things that I want to change. My stuff was pretty dialed in, but I tested everything that I had for the last year. I've been messing around with it. I've tried on different pants from different companies. I've tried different tops from different companies, and I finally found some stuff didn't fit me right. Some stuff was too tight. The pants didn't work. The pants rubbed in places where I didn't want them to rub. And I, you know, just trying out different stuff, I was able to come up with a really, really comfortable system. It kind of goes along with what I was talking about with Onyx, and that is test your equipment. Understand how to use it prior to. There's another little gadget that I took with me that will always be with me from every hunt now on, and that's a Garmin InReach Mini. And that thing, I had that ready to go. I had tested it. I had sent test messages. I practiced it. I messed with the maps. I did all of those, just was totally familiar with that system before I ever even powered it up in Colorado. And that's not one of those type of things that you want to figure out on the fly if you need that SOS button on the side of it. You don't want to try to figure out how to use that thing at the worst possible moment. Test your gear, right? That's the point I'm trying to get across. Be familiar with it. As far as my gear goes, now that I say that, I'm going to tell you some things that I didn't really test properly. One thing that I'm going to change in my kit is my tent. I'm not going to change it totally. I'm going to keep the tent that I have because I really like it, and I was happy with it. It's a North Face tent. It's just a little bit heavy and kind of cumbersome and big, and you know, I think it weighs in around 5 pounds. And honestly, for an early season archery elk hunt, I don't think I really even needed that tent. I kind of knew that going into the hunt, but I'd never done a backcountry hunt like that, and I just wanted something that I knew I was going to be comfortable in, and you know, there was kind of a comfort factor there that I was looking for. Next year, I'm going to run a tarp and just sleep underneath the tarp. We didn't have any issues. We slept outside the first night that we got there. We just threw our sleeping bags out on the ground, had no issues. With that quilt that I'm running, Neil mentioned that I run a quilt. That's a 6 a.m. outdoors, 10 degree. And we got down into the mid 20s one night. And even though I was in a tent, I was in a pair of shorts and a t-shirt, and I was snug as a bug. Couldn't have been happier with what I was sleeping in. And I had a decent sleeping pad to go with it, with a good R value. So anyway, I think I can shed some weight for early archery elk, and then as it gets a little bit colder, I'll have that North Face tent that I can keep with me. My jet boil was kick-ass. I was really happy with that thing. Really, really happy with it, as a matter of fact. I kept it in my pack every day. It went with me every day. At some point in time, we would stop and take a break, and I would heat up a cup of coffee and sit there and enjoy a late morning cup on the side of the mountain, and it was awesome. You want to talk about
mandatory?
I mean, it's just one of, for me, it's one of the things. I love coffee, and it's funny. I'm not a coffee snob. I don't care what kind of coffee I drink. I've drank 5 day old cold coffee from a cooler in the army. Just crap. So I'm totally happy with some Folgers instant coffee. I really like that. That was a comfort thing for me in the middle of the morning, to be able to stop, take a break, heat that up, and enjoy it right there. So the jet boil did really, really good. I think that was about it. I had a camera with me that I kind of undetermined whether or not I'll continue to take it with me. It's not that heavy, but I had it strapped to my backpack. It was on the waist belt, and I never used it. The whole time we were there, I took all the pictures that I took with the iPhone, and they all turned out great. I don't know if I'll keep taking that camera with me or not. Probably not, because even this past weekend when I was out hunting, it was strapped to my backpack and I never used it. So that's through 2-3 hunts that I've been on with where I didn't even use it. So that's probably going to go away. I think that's it. My camo was all First Light. I'm sorry, I take that back. The first few days that we were there, I ran a synthetic Under Armour Ridge Reaper shirt, which it was a good shirt, but it held odor pretty bad after the first day. And then, so I wore that for the first few days. And in the last few days, I was in my First Light Arrow Wool. It was awesome. No smell, no anything. You know, that Ridge Reaper shirt was just kind of a last minute. I grabbed it in case I needed it, and I just happened to put it on that first day for some reason, and I wasn't super happy with it. So in the future, I'll be in and probably going to keep just wearing First Light Merino or Arrow wool or some sort of wool in the future. But I like First Light. Doesn't scratch. There's no issues with it. I like it. Solomon 4D boots. That was sort of a last minute change. Mine, I don't know that they were totally broke in. I think they are now, but I was pretty happy with those. I got one blister during the whole week that we hunted, and that was the day that we were coming, the day one, the day we were coming off the side of the mountain. And that was a nasty, nasty hill that we were coming down. So I was pretty happy that I just got one blister, and that wasn't even a big deal. I put some duct tape on it, and it was good to go. So those Salomons are good boots. As far as gear goes, I think that's it for me. I'm sure you guys will hear me talk a lot more about gear throughout the next podcast to come. I really wanted to hear what Neil and Gus had to say about their stuff. I know Gus was doing the poncho thing, setting up that little tarp, and it seemed to work pretty good.
That was definitely something I would do different. So, like, just throwing a poncho out, is way lighter than most things. If you could get like a tarp, right, and like one other dude underneath it, you would be significantly warmer. It wasn't anything crazy, but there was a few times I'd wake up where I'm like, man, it's just a little chilly. Or at least, if nothing else, the wake up in the morning where you just don't want to get out of bed because it's cold outside. That's always helpful. I know there's a lot of light tents out there that you can get. You're just going to break the bank on them. And I would break my bank trying to get one of those tents. So the tarp is, or the poncho is definitely a really good second choice that really it works. You're going to be a little less comfortable, but it's ultimately effective and you're not going to get wet.
Before we shut it down, I'm going to go around the horn, and I'll start with Gus and ask, what was your favorite part of the week?
My favorite part of the week would be, it would probably go from Sunday to Sunday, if I could just give that blanket answer.
That's not good enough. You have to be more specific.
No, definitely my favorite part of the week for sure. Not that calling in that bowl for you wasn't cool, because that was also, that bowl, he was I wish I could have seen him, but that last night of the week was just that was a cool deal. And when we finally got out and we got two ridges over before we took a break and talked to each other for a second, and seeing the look on Neil's face is what. I think that moment right there was the like, damn, that was cool. That was my favorite part for sure.
Yeah. So I kind of compare the two, the day two where we got in, where I had the encounter with the bull, and then the last night. It's like day two was kind of like a nice, lazy beach cruiser bike ride, down the nice flat road. And that last encounter on that last night was like riding straight downhill on a mountain bike as fast as you absolutely can, and the most intense thing ever. That was the difference between the two. Our encounter was cool, but that thing on the last night was just awesome. So.
Absolutely. And that's like what I was, I think I told you guys, I know I said it in the last podcast that we tried, but so how you and I did it, Chad, that was almost a perfect situation. And it was great. And that bull, he was ready to play. He was doing it. It was fun. But the bull that last night was a lot more fun. He was way more. And that's how I like to hunt elk. I like to, I like having that, having it be personal with them and talk to them, and you get to interact with that animal. And that's, to me, there's nothing more special than that. I had called in, excuse me, I called in a giant, a certified giant 7-point this year, he was in 45 yards, I think, and, couldn't get a shot for whatever reason. And that was cool. Well, I would have taken that shot any day of the week, or taken that bull any day of the week. But when I killed my bull, which was, he wasn't no slack. Like, I got a nice 6-point. But my bull versus that bull, I would have shot if you take the situations or the scenarios, I would have shot my bull every day of the week. Side by side, I would have shot the bigger one, but I like to try to shoot the biggest thing that I can. But I like that the how, not so much the what, if that makes sense. You know, like, how did it happen? My bull came in bouncing his head off everything that he could find, and he was the bull in that unit that wanted to die that day. He was ready for a fight. And that was awesome. That bull that last night, he was the bull that wanted to die that day. He was ready for a fight. And we kind of messed it up, but he came back around and he was ready to do it again. We just lost light.
Yeah. Yep. Neil, what about you? What was your favorite part?
Well, I'm going to echo everyone else. Friday night was, you know, the ultimate evening for me. Amazing. Didn't get much better than that. I mean, even coming from a first-time elk hunter, that night was just wild, man. I mean, insane, crazy stuff, a lot of fun. But, you know, like Gus said, the whole week, I mean, coming from Indiana, which I love this state. It's a great state. But you go out to Colorado, and it's, I mean, it's like, for me, it's like being in paradise. It's just amazingly beautiful seeing the mountain ranges and the ridgelines and the aspen trees poking out amongst the spruce. I would never get tired of it. I tell you what, I could wake up every morning and look at that stuff, just be one happy man. So, you know, just being out there was really, really awesome, good experience as well. So, yeah, Friday night was badass, man. That was great. Just, you know, if we would have put one on the ground, that would have been the coup de grace, I guess you'd say. But yeah, good stuff. Good stuff.
Yep, I totally agree with you guys. Friday night was definitely the pinnacle. But I'll go with something a little bit different. So I enjoyed a lot of our campfire cooking. Gus brought out some backstrap from the elk that he had killed a couple weeks prior. We got to eat some awesome backstrap steaks and tacos, and then, I don't know, some kind of really good Mexican-style rice to go with the elk tacos. Just killer. We had another night where we had some ribeye steaks that we cooked up on the fire. Did the same thing where we just made up some tacos and stuff and kind of just sat around BSing a little bit, you know. And those nights, to me, were sort of those cool moments. None of them topped chasing the elk on that Friday night or the day that we encountered the one on day two. But you guys already beat those up, so I'm not going to do them. And I just really enjoyed that, hanging out, kind of sitting around the campfire and taking it easy. After a long, hard day and hammering those mountains and putting in a solid 10 miles. It's kind of nice to be able to just throw out your little chair and sit down and enjoy a elk taco. And what do we have? Do we have Keystones at that point? Is that what we were having? No. We had no, Bud Light or something.
No, Neil couldn't bring himself to get the Keystones.
Yeah. Grab some stones.
But look at him now.
But it was nice to just be able to sit around and relax. And as you know, we really, like I said, the original plan was to camp out, do the whole backcountry hunt thing, and it didn't work out. But we absolutely made the best of what we had. If sitting around that truck is pretty nice, I will say that. So there's something to be said for setting up them spike camps and just doing the truck style hunt. It was very nice to be able to do that.
I definitely agree. And I would say that the campfire shenanigans was second, second only to, you know, have an elk scream right in your face. If I wasn't such a Looney Tune for elk, then that'd probably be my favorite part. But I just like having them doing that thing, you know?
Yep.
But yeah, that was a lot of fun.
You breaking up? You okay, bud? You crying a little bit?
No. Yeah. No. No, I've got something coming in. Some phlegm or something like that in my throat. It keeps popping up.
Gotcha. Well, all right, guys. I think I'll wrap it up here. Do you guys have anything else that you wanted to talk about? Any last minute pointers or anything that before we shut this down? Neil, I'll let you go first if you've got anything.
Have your stuff ready to go the night before. As far as everything, have your water, your water bags filled, your extra water, whatever you're bringing to water or everything, have it ready to go the night before. So when you get up that morning, all you got to do is dress, eat whatever you eat for breakfast, and go. You're not going to worry about filling bags with your headlamp on, stuff like that. So that was, we learned that pretty quick. Do that the night before, and then you're ready to rock the next morning. That's about it.
Yep, I think that's a real good point. There was one night where we came back to camp, and I don't remember. I was beat down. I was tired. And I think I said, yeah, man, I'm just going to fill up my water bladder and stuff in the morning. And I don't remember who it was, Neil or Gus. One of you guys said, nope, you better do that. You better do it right now because you ain't going to want to do it in the morning. And that was a fact. It was cold that next morning. It might have been the morning it was raining, actually. But I already had everything done. And that was grab your pack and go. And we were out the door. So, what about you, Gus?
I guess just for... You know, my last, I got maybe two things I could probably jump, or two soapboxes I could jump on, but I'll try not to do that this time. One is just for those of you who really don't have the opportunities or the privileges to live either out in the West or at elevation or stuff like that, if you want to come do it, don't let that scare you or don't let anything scare you. Come hunt these magnificent creatures that we have, whether it's mule deer or elk, whether, you know, bear, whatever it is. But when you do, just you come ready to play. If you want to be, you know, more successful than the other guy, it's not a whole lot of preparation that you can do. I mean, you have to be in shape, but getting in shape at sea level and then coming to, you know, 10,000 feet and trying to do the same things that you were doing, you're gonna get met with a lot of resistance. So just know that that's gonna happen, and be, you know, just be ready to have to push through it. And if you can, come out a day early and just, you know, run around or do whatever you got to do just to try to get acclimated a little bit, because that'll help you in the long run for sure. That it'll definitely pay dividends, because you can, you know, elk specifically, at least, they walk as fast as most people can run. So when you're trying to keep up with an elk at 11,000 feet, which I did I tried to do for the first time this year, and I was literally brought to my knees. Like, I collapsed to my knees. Like, I cannot keep up with this thing. So just be ready to play. And then, another thing, and this is more of just kind of the hunting, the way I see the hunting world going in general, and I'm not affiliated with it at all, but, and I know I said earlier, I like to kill the biggest thing I can find, whether it's a big buck, a big bull, who wouldn't, but just shoot what makes you happy. Yeah, I like to kill the biggest thing that I can, but I'll shoot a spike as well, just as happily. So don't get hung up on, you know, the classification of what this animal, you know, this is a 180 buck, so he's a shooter now. Like, no, if just do what makes you happy. If sitting at the campfire, cracking a cold one and bullshitting with the boys makes you happy, then do that. If damn near killing yourself on the mountainside, like I like to try to do for some reason, makes you happy, then send it. And that's kind of my advice on it, I guess, or my input.
Our good input.
Don't forget why we do this. It's not to put the biggest whenever on Instagram. So yeah, that's that. I could go on for forever on that one. You can edit that out. I'm sorry.
I totally agree. I will caveat a little bit and say that you can be very physically prepared to come out there. I'm at pretty good shape. I stay in good shape for the Army. I do a lot of ruck marches. I spent a lot of time in my backpack doing ruck or doing packs or what, you know, in the Army we call them ruck marches, right? So I spent a lot of time doing that. And I still wasn't ready for elevation. I wasn't ready at all for that. It took a couple of days. And I think I would say by about day three, moving around at 10,000 feet didn't really seem to have as much impact as what 9,000 feet had on the first day. So it just, it takes a little bit of time and you just have to understand it and just be, and know that it's going to take you a few days to be where you're really getting after. That's it. I think my takeaway, I've already beat it up pretty good and I'm not going to beat it up again, but I'll just mention it again. Is test your gear, get it out, make sure you know what you're doing with all your stuff, especially if it's electronic stuff or it's something that's going to, you're not just going to put it on and wear it all day. If it's a jet boil, know how to use your jet boil. If it's a Garmin inReach, know how to use it, know how to send messages, know how to use the SOS button. If it's Onyx Maps, whatever it is, make sure you know how to operate the stuff that you've got. And I'll just leave that one at that. I think it's kind of self-explanatory. So I think we'll wrap it up here, guys. I appreciate the multiple efforts to get this thing done. But anyway, before we shut it down, I'll give you guys an opportunity to leave your contact information. I think Neil is an excellent resource. If you guys want to reach out and ask Neil, what's the rookie perspective? What's the idea of a new guy that's going out for the first time? Gus has more experience. He has, you know, a lot of experience, and we've touched on it here, so he's a good resource for that. So if people want to reach out and ask these guys questions, they both said that they'll leave contact information. So Gus, go ahead and leave your contact information.
Yeah, so you can find me at Instagram. So it's Fletcher's_outside. It's that simple. Just shoot me a message or whatever if you want to get in touch with me. You can look me up on Facebook as well. It's just Gus Fletcher. That's pretty much it. Anyone who's who wants to is more welcome to come follow me or ask me a question or do whatever it is that you want to do. I'm not going to lie. I'm pretty terrible at keeping up with my Instagram page as far as updating it and sending pictures and stuff like that. But I do have a couple other cool things in the shoot for the rest of the year. So more pictures and stuff like that to follow. You might get a kick out of it.
Go ahead, Neil. Go ahead and leave your contact info.
Oh, I'm sorry. You can catch me on Instagram at NeilBurge1971, and on Facebook is just my name, NeilBurge. Also, I'll be on the Backcountry Rookies Facebook page as well. You can shoot a question there and be happy to answer whatever you got.
For those of you that are wondering, the NeilBurge1971, that was actually the year that he graduated high school.
Yes, so. Yes. Thanks to our sharp-eyed reader, Gus Fletcher, for catching that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's good stuff, man. Good stuff. Okay, so, and I'll put those in the show notes, so they'll be down there in case you guys need to know how to spell Fletcher or something, or Burge, maybe. But they'll be in the show notes.
Yeah, and no, absolutely. And feel free to hit any one of us up, or at least myself. Yeah. I know that. Neil, I'm sure you're welcoming as well.
Yep, and then I'm pretty sure they're both on the Backcountry Rookies Nation and the Rookies page. So whatever, there's multiple ways for people to reach out and ask questions. I learned a lot. I think Neil learned a lot. Gus already knows a lot. So we're good resources. So with that, that's it, guys. Let's call it.
I learned a lot as well, man. every elk season's a new one, so
yeah,
it doesn't matter what it is. It's you learn. Yeah. That's the cool part about elk is they give the lesson before, or they give the test before the lesson.
There's been a lot of people that have come on that say, and this is really, really experienced people that I've had on as guests, and they'll say that they identify with that the rookies concept because every year they come out it's like they have to start all over again, hit the reset button, and they feel like they're new to elk hunting. So, I think everybody learns a little bit of something every year. So, anyway, with that?
Absolutely. And if you're the one that thinks that you don't have to learn any more about elk hunting, good luck to you. Because I can name some guys that have forgot more about elk hunting than I will ever know. And every year they're like, well, I'd have never thought about that, but he did this, you know? And they're just, like, I don't know. I like to be a student of the sport. So I take in as much information as I can and just spend as much time in this country as I can. Luckily, I get, you know, I'm fortunate enough to live in it, so.
Lucky man. All right, guys, we'll wrap it up there.
Thanks for listening to that show, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it. It sure was a lot of fun to be able to catch up with these guys. It's been a few weeks since we got back from Colorado, so it was really fun to be able to talk about the show, or talk about the hunt, rather, and just kind of remember those times. I mean, they're going to be memories forever, but it really was cool to be able to spend a week with Neil and Gus, and then recap it and relive it again on a podcast. So, hope you enjoyed it. Coming up next, I've got Justin and Oliver from Wild Ops. Check them out on Instagram. It's wild_ops. Justin and Oliver have a pretty incredible elk hunting story for their first year hunting in Colorado. Great success and a great story, and they share it. So, it's a lot of fun. And as always, thank you to Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network for allowing the Rookies in the Backcountry to be part of that network. Really good network over there. Jump over, check it out, and listen to some of the other big game and some of the other whitetail podcasts that are out there. A lot of good stuff to enjoy. So thank you, everybody. Come back in a couple weeks and listen to the Wild Ops episode. Out of here.